Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. This is Steve. This week, we have a very special interview with Nick Thomas, founder, president, and chief innovation officer at Finicity. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Steve, and with me, we have Nick Thomas, who's the co-founder and chief innovation officer at Finicity. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Good to have you. And I'm also joined by my colleague, John. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here, too.
Thanks for joining. So, Nick, let's start at the beginning. What is Finicity?
Yeah, so Finicity is a consumer financial data sharing platform. We have been in business since 2000. We picked the best year in history to start a company. And we launched the company with a vision to really help consumers make better financial decisions. And so we created a product called Envelopes. And one of the important components of that product was data aggregation. So enabling the consumer to permission access to their data from their bank into this Envelopes application. And, fast forward 20 years and our Envelopes, our direct-to-consumer business is obviously still in place, but we've also created a piece of the business that focuses on enabling other applications to leverage those same integrations, as well as next-gen credit decisioning solutions. So if you've heard of UltraFICO, or Experian Boost, we power those new credit scoring mechanisms.
What was the pain point, or what did you notice about that was missing in the market that that got you guys started?
Great question. So when we launched this data services business, we effectively took the technology, put an API on top, and started to shop it out B2B. Second client in the door was an alternative lender. And they were wanting to digitize the process of data collection during the underwriting process. And, you know, every two or three clients that we signed up in our first year was some form of lender wanting to use data aggregation to support credit decisioning. And so we saw that as a blue ocean opportunity, and we really dove in headfirst in the credit decisioning. We became a consumer reporting agency. We doubled down on our relationships with folks like Experian. Experian is an investor in the company. And we have released a suite of products that have been fully blessed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for verification of income and assets. And, you know, again, as I talked before about these others, and so, yeah, I think it was opportunistic. You know, we had the pipes. We developed over 16,000 integrations over the first 14 years of our life. And, being in the right place at the right time with the right product, we've been able to catch the wave of this new consumer permissioned data ecosystem and leverage that asset and build some pretty cool stuff on top of it.
So Nick, you guys began this in, you know, as you mentioned, back in the year 2000. Did you begin doing screen scraping and then move on to APIs, or how has the product evolved in the past 18 to 20 years?
Yeah, so data aggregation really was a solution. You know, if you go all the way back to, you know, the mid to late 90s, OFX was a standard that was created by Intuit and Microsoft and others to really enable consumers to get access to their data into products like Quicken and Microsoft Money, and also to enable payment use cases. And today there's over 7,000 financial institutions that have some form of OFX services at their bank. And data aggregation was created, number one, to facilitate data access from financial institutions who didn't have OFX services. And also there's more data that existed, you know, outside of the OFX domain. And so, you know, in the early days, you had several players that had effectively developed the screen scraping technology to get that data as an alternative or an enhancement to OFX services at the banks. It's a method of getting data using the consumer's login credentials, and the consumer basically leverages the data aggregator as a wallet to store their credentials, and then we go on their behalf to go log in and go and get the data. Finicity migrated away from screen scraping in the vast majority of cases, kind of way back in the 2000s. But screen scraping is still used by us in a small percentage of the cases, and for other aggregators, they use it for a larger percentage of the time.
Great. A follow-up on that is, say that I'm a consumer and I'm applying for a mortgage, will I ever know that I'm interacting with the Finicity platform, or is it all just happens behind the scenes?
It really depends. In some cases, it's an explicitly known Finicity is providing that access. In other cases, it's white labeled by the lender or the financial institution. So it would be in the terms and conditions that the consumer signs. But we enable both a branded, kind of a Finicity branded experience, as well as a lender or PFM branded experience.
One issue that also has come up a lot for us is sort of the dispersion of talent and of really interesting technologies beyond the Bay Area and Silicon Valley, where both John and I sit. And I wonder if you can maybe speak to what you're seeing in terms of the growth of the tech scene and what we call Silicon Slopes here in Utah, because I know you guys are headquartered near Salt Lake City, right?
We are. We're in Murray, which is just south of Salt Lake City in kind of the broader Salt Lake City Valley. Salt Lake City has really been an interesting place. You go back to the kind of the 70s, 80s time period, and you have WordPerfect and Novell. In the late 80s, you had the likes of Megahertz and a few other tech successes for Utah. And over the last 10 years or so, we've seen an increase in the number of large startups. There's been several large exits that have happened in Utah. Most recently, Qualtrics was bought by SAP for $8 billion, and that was a Utah startup. And we also see a trend towards, rather than selling out, companies going public. We're also seeing both West and East Coast VCs set up shop here in Utah. One number I heard was that with the Qualtrics sale, they created 150 new millionaires in Utah.
Wow.
And as you understand, when you start to have that kind of success, it builds upon itself.
Great, great. How is there's such a greater and greater emphasis on privacy and security. I'm sure you've had to invest a lot more in those areas. But is that an obstacle for increasing your client base and partners?
That's a really big question, and kind of what's happening in the world of data security. There's a lot of places we could go with that particular question. But relative to the services that Finicity provides today, so we've taken a path that as a CRA, for example, we're the only aggregator who is a consumer reporting agency. And we felt like we needed, as we started to create attributes and insights off of the raw data to support products like the verification of income and asset products that I talked about previously, we saw that we needed to kind of step up our game in terms of regulatory compliance. And even though the regulatory regimes have not explicitly stated that, we need to effectively be the CRA, it has played well for us in the market and has shown to the market that we take our role in the world of security and compliance very seriously. We're audited by the largest financial institutions and players, as you can imagine, with a product like Experian Boost or with UltraFICO that they wouldn't do business with somebody that didn't pass their test.
I have to admit, I've never heard of UltraFICO or Experian Boost. How are those different from the words without the superlatives?
So last October, we, in partnership with FICO and Experian, announced a new product called UltraFICO. And UltraFICO is, you know, the problem we're trying to solve is that there's 53 million Americans today that are either thin file or no file. They can't get access to credit. And so they're not really included in the financial ecosystem. There have been lots of efforts, both political and product-wise, to try to assess risk for folks that don't have credit data. But the number of people that are unscorable continues to go up. There's a growing percentage of college graduates that come out of school without a credit card, preferring to spend, you know, cash or Venmo or other, debit card or Venmo card. There's also a growing group of folks in what's called the credit retired space where, you know, they reach a certain point financially and they no longer need to, you know, take out credit to buy a car and they've got their house paid off. And so the number of folks that are kind of in that invisible space where the bureaus don't have coverage for has continued to grow. And so what we wanted to do was to take our knowledge of cash flow and work together with the leaders in scoring to create a brand new credit score called the UltraFICO score. So UltraFICO looks at cash flow in your primary checking, savings, or money market account. And we create a score based upon how you manage your money. So what we've done...
They're trying to get a more comprehensive view of the borrower rather than like the narrow, standardized, traditional measures. Just look at it from a broader picture of what people are capable of.
Exactly. So, yeah, as we all know, cash flow is the ultimate indicator of both ability and propensity to pay. It's much better, at least, you know, when I talk to people about it, it seems reasonable that it would be better than a debt-to-income ratio and whether you pay your credit card on time. And we also know probably a larger number of people who are great people, they have great jobs, they make great money, but they've never taken out a loan. And they're completely worthy and would be very low risk. And so how do you solve the problem of assessing somebody against financial risk without having existing bureau data? And that's really what UltraFICO is about.
So you're saying these two are new? They're already being used?
Yes. So they are in market. UltraFICO is in pilot right now and will be released by the end of this year. And Experian Boost, however, is a different product. And let me give you the high level. In that case, a consumer, you can go to Experian.com/boost, and they offer the consumer the opportunity to boost their score by discovering trade lines in their transaction data. So if you're paying your cell phone bill, or your utilities bill through a checking account or a credit card, Finicity goes out, grabs the data that you permission. We discover the trade lines that represent those payment streams, and then qualify that as a payment stream that can be written to file, and then Experian writes that to file one. And so we've boosted. In the 4 months since our launch, we've nearly boosted 10 million points in the USA today.
Quite impressive. Can you speak a little bit about your involvement with the financial data exchange and what the benefit for consumers will be of this?
You know, back in the 90s, I worked for 3Com and Palm, and one of the projects that we took on was partnering with some players to create a new short-range wireless standard called Bluetooth. There were nine companies that started, and 3Com Palm was one of those nine companies. And we created a technical specification, and we created an interoperability framework that would enable an entrepreneur to join the SIG for free pick up the spec, go build a solution, and then go get it tested. And once it's tested at a test house, they could market that product globally, and it would be guaranteed to interoperate with other Bluetooth products. And so that new blue ocean that Bluetooth created enabled all kinds of new innovation and new products. And, you know, arguably Bluetooth is one of the most recognized brands around the world. And it was simply a little short-range wireless spec that was designed to really create a new ecosystem. So we created this IP-free zone, the other use cases, and then started stamping out specs to meet those use cases. And manufactured, stepped up, and built products to support it. So taking that same cue or that same model from Bluetooth, it became really clear to me that the problem of data sharing was very similar to the problem that we had in the world of Bluetooth. And so I just threw together a deck and started to shop that out to the industry about around doing the same thing and creating a standard, creating a way to guarantee interoperability, and doing that in an IP-free way. And so today, the Financial Data Exchange has 60 contributing members. Our two latest members are Visa and MasterCard. And we are in standardizing the technology layer around open banking globally. Really, open banking is financial data sharing or kind of the legacy data aggregation use case. And so FDX is really taking a cue from Bluetooth to create this standardized way and technology stack to support consumer permission financial data sharing. And it's got significant momentum, and our drive is to make that the Bluetooth of data sharing globally.
Sort of staying in that same realm, we've seen a lot of funding go to, you know, to companies like Plaid, which I think acquired Qovo recently, or I think late last year. But how do you see the data aggregation ecosystem taking shape in the U.S.?
You know, that is obviously, it's a big validation for the industry and a validation that consumer financial data sharing and having those integrations in place there's a lot of opportunity there. One of the big things that I see coming down the pike is a renewed focus on data privacy and consumer data rights. And so we see, with the California Data Privacy Act and with other states enacting similar acts, GDPR, there's discussions at the national level around a U.S. national data privacy and consumer data rights legislation. We see that, in the coming years globally, that consumers will, number one, it will be very clear that consumers own their own data, and that they, number two, should be able to access that data into any place they want it to be. And that consumer permission is absolutely essential to companies using any data. That companies need to think about data traceability, and consumers' right to be forgotten extends beyond the original creation of the data to wherever that data gets permission to. And that we need to be able to protect consumers so that their data is tracked and it's known, and a consumer has the right to remove that data from any other third party anytime they want.
Well, you're going to find a lot of people agreeing with you, so it looks like you're heading into the wind, or the wind at your back, I should say.
Well, either direction, it's all good. Bring it on.
Yeah, you sound like one of those stories where they say, well, it took us 20 years to become an overnight success.
Well, that's what we hope, right? And I believe that, and the thing, today, after 20 years of blood, sweat, and tears, I'm more excited about our future than I've ever been. And I'm not just saying that. And I'm just, the passion for what we're doing is so deeply embedded. I hope for financial success. I'd like to be able to retire someday I've burned the ships, and this is success or bust, right? But on the other hand, I feel like I'm more on a mission today than I've ever been, and that's a cool place to be.
Great stuff. Well, thanks so much for joining, Nick.
Thank you so much.